A Prairie Home Companion with Garrison Keillor sets sail for the Eastern Caribbean March 14th through the 21st. Musical guests include Paul Sebar and Tomorrow Sound, Mickey Mills and Steel, Story Hill, plus all the regulars and more. Cabins are on sale now at prairiehome.org.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out there on the edge of the prairie. We've come to that long, cold, dark time of the year. Not much to be said about that, except that if you have not spent December in the north of Norway, then you don't know what cold and dark is. You go up to Tromsø, up above the Arctic Circle, and the sun tries to come up for about 2 hours a day, and then it gives up. I tell you, the light of this full moon, this long night moon tonight, will be greater than the noon sun in Norway. Those people came over. They came over to the prairie to try out horizontal farming and also for, to get some light, to get a little color in their eyes. Sunday was the first Sunday of Advent, so now it all starts in Lake Wobegon. Pastor Liz gave the sermon on the 13th chapter of the Gospel of Mark, in which we are told to keep awake, you know not when the master of the house will return. So stay alert, which is a good idea. She had Larry the sexton dim the lights and light candles, so it was very dramatic. And as she came almost to the end of the sermon, she looked up and she saw a man walk into the choir loft. The choir didn't seem to notice him, but he looked a great deal like Pastor Enquist, our old pastor, and indeed it was. He hid up there until everybody had left the sanctuary, and then he found her down in the office, and they had a cup of coffee together. He said, "I thought you went to Rome." She said, "I did, and I got over it. I came back." He is still the chaplain of the Mall of North America, south of Minneapolis, which he likes. There's no preaching. You would not preach at a mall. I mean, where would you start? And where would it end? And there's, you know, there's no confirmation or anything. There's some counseling, because people do like to go to a strange minister to bring up those nasty things they don't want to burden their own minister with. And there are weddings that take place, you know, around the fountains in the mall. And there are memorial services now, because for a lot of people, Starbucks is kind of their church, you know, and they go there for fellowship, and latte is you know, it's kind of a sacrament, and so, you know, why not? I mean, Starbucks wouldn't like it if you brought in a whole coffin, you know, with a body inside, but, you know, a little urn, set it down on the table, who's to know, and people are so busy nowadays that the number of people who show up for your memorial service may be many fewer than you imagine. So might be six or eight people sitting around having coffee around your ashes, and maybe some of them smoke, and I don't know. Talking about whatever. Pastor Enquist said that he is thinking about writing a book about Lake Wobegon. Pastor Liz said, "You know, there have been books already written about Lake Wobegon." "I know," he said, "but they're kind of sentimental books." She said, "Have you read them?" He said, "No." He said, "I don't read fiction." She said, "You're not fiction. Dorothy at the Chatterbox is not fiction. Carl Krebsbach, the Sons of Canute, they're not fiction, are they?" He said, "Well, be that as it may," he said, "be that as may, how are you? How are you doing?" That phrase, "be that as it may," is a favorite phrase in my town. I don't know how you would diagram that sentence. "Let it be as it," I don't know, "be that as it may," people say. All it means is just whatever. Whatever. Move on. Change the subject. We'll go on. We'll talk about something else. You know, somebody gets up on their high horse and they start orating, and you say, "Well, be that as it may, I Hope we get some snow here pretty soon, though. With it up in the mid-50s, that's going to be a pretty tall order. So, Christmas lights are on all over town. People disagree about when you should turn them on. For sure, you should not turn them on until after Thanksgiving. Some people wait until the beginning of Advent. So now, this week would be in the clear. The Magen Dances, as always, have the most brilliant Christmas light display. It's like a little Las Vegas up there on McKinley Avenue. They got three Santas, and they got zipper lights under the sleigh, so it looks like he's flying through the air. And they have hallelujah in syllables, hallelujah, over and over and over. It's just it's an eyesore, and we're used to it, and we train ourselves not to see it, and after a while we don't, you know. Dorothy wrote her Christmas letter on Monday, and she took it down to the post office and mailed the letters on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, she started to think about one sentence in her Christmas letter in which she said, "At my age, there's nothing I really want for Christmas except solitude." She worried what people would think of this, you know, friends and family who were probably going to give her a present, and here she said she didn't want any. So she went up to the post office. She said, "Have you sent those?" "No, Mr. Bowser said they're here, and they're in this big canvas bag if you want to go through it." Well, she did. She picked them out, 27 letters, and she brought them down to the chatterbox, and she opened up the envelopes, and she wrote in ballpoint pen, "Now and then." "A little solitude now and then." Sealed them up again, took them back up to the post office. He charged her for new stamps. She was so irked about that. It really burned her bacon. She came back down to the cafe, and there was Betty Ingebretson sitting there and drinking a cup of coffee. Betty Ingebretson, who was 87 years old. I haven't seen her in town for weeks and weeks. Dorothy said, "How are you?" Mrs. Ingebretson said, "I'm here. This is me. You don't ask." She was told by her doctor back in August, or Lunasa, that she did not have long, and she, you know, it might be months, it might be weeks. And so she's been packing up her things in her little stucco house, and she's been packing up her keepsakes and her souvenirs and all of her treasures and dividing them into cardboard boxes labeled with the names of her six children and her grandchildren, the ones who actually call or write. Texting does not count, I'm sorry. So she was dividing all of her things up, and somehow in the last couple of weeks, the cold weather has revived her, and so she started to look through her boxes for Christmas ornaments, thinking she would do it one more time. She would have one tree. She's decided that, and she's thought a lot about her granddaughter Lola, who lives in Santa Barbara, California, who Betty loves more than anybody else in this world. Skinny girl, 14, and she wears the skinny jeans and the tank tops and the ballet flats, and she puts a little bright crimson in her hair. She's a very stylish kid. And it's dawned on Betty Ingebretson that she will never see Lola again in this life because it's a long winter. And Lola lives in Santa Barbara. She complains it's cold when it's 40 degrees. This weather would kill her. This little skinny girl, it would freeze that little metal ring in her belly button, and it would contract and tightly, and she'd have to be taken to the emergency room, and maybe the entire belly button be taken off. Betty is so sad about this, but of course she would never say a word about it, never mention it. Lola is a bright, independent kid. Her mother has just gone off into treatment, residential treatment for habitual shoplifting, and her father is very, very busy. He's in the biodynamic, holistic data transference business, whatever that may be. He works an 80-hour week, and this kid is bringing herself up, and she's just gotten her first cell phone. And whenever the phone rings in Betty Ingebrigtsen's little house, she hopes and prays that it is her granddaughter, Lola. She feels so close to her. She'd come down to the cafe because she got a call that Mrs. Berge was sick, and so she could not accompany the fourth and fifth graders when they went up to the Good Shepherd home to sing Christmas carols for the elderly up there. And they asked Betty if she could fill in. And even though Betty feels sick as a dog, nonetheless, she can still get up and walk. She can still play the piano. So she went up there after her coffee down in the cafe. She needed help walking out the door and getting into the car and help walking into the Good Shepherd home. And there they all were, all of her old classmates, and they didn't know her anymore. They were like ghosts sitting there, some of them in wheelchairs, some of them sunk down into couches and chairs. She sat down at the piano. The kids gathered behind her, holding candles. They had bags of ginger cookies to hand out as they sang, "Joy to the world, the Lord hath come, let earth receive its king." And they sang, "Oh, come, all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant," though you looked at the faithful and they were not joyful. They certainly didn't look triumphant. What was their to be triumphant about? I mean, some of them had lost their minds. They didn't recognize their old friend, Mrs. Ingebrigtsen, but they did recognize that these were children who were singing to them. This was the future. This was the world to come that would endure after they had left. And they beamed at these children. They feasted on these children who were singing, holding candles, holding bags of ginger cookies. "Your life almost over and your body is in ruins and your friends have disappeared. But some things remain, candles and the smell of ginger and children and joyfulness and triumph, even if it is beyond your capacity." Mrs. Ingebrigtsen did not stick around afterward. It was just too depressing. All of these kids she used to run around with on the playground, and now they can hardly put one foot in front of another. But still, there's soup, you know. She went down to the cafe, and there was beef with barley soup, and she had a sliver of pecan pie, and she saw that supper would be Welsh rarebit, melted cheese on toast, and she thought maybe she'd come back for that. She could get Charlie to come and give her a ride. A couple months ago, she was at death's door, and it would not open for her, and now there's just one thing she'd like to do before she dies, and she probably can't do it, but she would like to go on a hayride and have a wagon pull up, pulled by horses with big mounds of soft hay, not hay bales, but soft hay, and people lying in it in piles, people scooched all together, wrapped in warm blankets, and trotting along, the horses pull you down a snowy road between tall trees, and you lie there in the company of your confreres and your friends, and it's not long before people start to sing, and they sing, "We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year." You all get off the wagon as it goes uphill to give the horses a chance, and they break into a trot, and you all run after, and you hop on board in the bluish light and the light of this long night moon. You ride along. Betty imagines this at night, lying in bed, imagines that Lola is right there next to her, and their arms are around each other as they sing, "Angels from the realms of glory," as they sing, De came anew to you the fest. De came for den hoye guest. Some stay to leave hute niv. Some new toss gave fruit. Oh, friend. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, the men are good looking, and the children are all above average.